Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, this is another production podcast for the Sex Work and Sexualities special series. We have a very special guest today who's going to talk us through their work and who they are. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, my name is Ivan Monalisa. I'm a two-spirit transgender author and performer. Originally, I come from Chile, and I've been living in New York since the last century, 1995. Yeah, last century.
Can you tell us what the name of your book is, please, and who published it?
The name of the book is not just any name. It's because you have to see how it's wrote. The title says Las Beauty Queens. But if you know English and you know Spanish, or especially if you live here in New York or United States, you understand more because the title is a reflex of the culture that I come from or the culture that the Latino community, you know, do here or how we contaminate the language. That's what the title is, Spanglish.
Spanglish.
It's the mixing between the Spanish and in English. It's something like it's not new. I've been for a lot of time, but now it's getting like so that's why it's very important for me that write the title like that. You know what I mean? Because it's a political thing also. You know, a writer is not only a writer, it's also a political, to write a book is a political fact, it's a political push, it's a political act.
Yeah. So language is vital.
Yeah.
So can you tell us what format the book is? Because it's titled as a novel, but the writing is amazingly autobiographical. So can you tell us what the format of the book is?
Okay, so I have to say something before, like there is another book before this one that also the title is in Spanglish. The name is La Misma Nota Forever. It means like the same high forever, La Misma Nota. So when you are high, you say, oh, look at la nota that you have, look at how high you are. But la nota means different things too. You know what I mean? Because I got a nota because I'm working so hard. So, you know, it's something like you can play with that word, you know, something beautiful that have the language, no? Okay, but it was translated as a never, ever, ever coming down. But now if I can come back in time, I will ask to the publisher keep the original title as La Misma Nota Forever, like now it's a beauty queen because what I say just before that the Spanglish is a political thing. You know what I mean? How the influence of the Spanish has in the English. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like how you say conquista?
Okay.
And but al revés for the other side. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if you got what I'm trying to say. Okay. So I had to start from the beginning. Uh-huh. Like when I came to New York City, the people who, make a long story short, the people of the urban tribe who gave me the welcome were not the artists, because I came because I received an invitation from New York Dramatists to stay 1 month here. But at night time, I escaped to the street because at this time, I'm talking about 1995, when still you could see the Times Square as a health kitchen neighborhood. And it was like a scene from Meet Now Cowboy. I don't know, you saw the movie. So I was like, oh my God, I feel like I was inside the movie. All the other guys who were like people who were like staying at New York Dramatists, who is a place that received for certain quantity of time, in the case was 1 month, to go over there and read theater, know another people who write theater for playwrights. I mean, so I was invited as a playwright. And I didn't care about nothing, going to the theater. The only thing that I was waiting for the nighttime for to see all these people, all these characters. I mean, for me, it was like, oh my God, I mean, in a movie, inside a movie, inside in a book, you know what I mean? Inside in something like I never expected to see, you know what I mean? So, but in the time I started to become friends, because I'm very like, I'm not shy, a shy person. I always like to, hey, you know what I mean? If I see a person for a second time, I'm going to try to say hi. You know what I mean? So I'm friendly or whatever, but I became friends with all these transvestites that came from different parts. You know, I was so fascinated because all of them spoke Spanish. You know what I mean? From Colombia, from Mexico, from Puerto Rico, from República Dominicana, you know? And all of them, they hustle around that neighborhood. You know what I mean? And the guys too, they were gorgeous, you know what I mean? From Dominican Republic. So I was very, like, how would you say, in provinciano?
Yeah.
Country boy, country person, because in Chile at this time, everybody was like me, like the same color, you know what I mean, the same nothing. So when I start to see all these guys, like, you know, black guys, no sounds now like, please don't put it, because people are going to say, like, I'm talking about black people, like something like, how you say, exotic, you know what I mean? But for me, were very exotic, you know? I saw they were beautiful, you know, because it was like a dark skin and but green eyes sometimes, you know? I was like, oh my God, I mean, like, fascinated. So all the time, all these characters show up at nighttime, you know what I mean? Because they were hustlers. And we became friends. So in a moment, the month was over. I didn't have any more room at New York Dramatists. And I was like, no, I want to stay. And I was so frustrated because I tried to work in some restaurant and I didn't want like people give me like orders. So a lot of time I was like, I left the place or they fired me, you know, after 1 day or after a couple of hours. So I was, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, my grand live, you know? I never worked in my life before because I was kind of spoiled without coming from my parents are now they are retired, very hardworking people, you know what I mean? So, but they spoiled it to me and my sister. So I just studied, I just went to university, you know what I mean? So at this time, my parent was not there here, so I have to work, you know? So, and I didn't like to receive orders, you know what I mean? I was very like arrogant, I don't know. and the girl told me, well, you know, Chilena, but they call me La Chilena because they saw I was gay, so they call me La Chilena. They never call me Van. They say, oh, Chilena, well, was just do the same thing that we're doing. And yeah, I started little by little, and they taught me how to do the surf work, how to shark, how to rotate myself, you know what I mean? And then start like the thing that started as a game, as a curiosity, start to take me. Thank you. Then were years until, you know, for more than 15 years, I went to the sex work. And in all this year, I met wonderful people. I met my best friends that I wanna say that I had in life. They taught me a lot of things about life, about like, I don't know how to explain, something like I never expected to learn. And in my stories, the first one is about that. It's about all these characters who were my best friends, because most of them are not here anymore. And, bueno, the second one is like it's the same story, because the same character who are in the short stories of the first book show in the second book. And as a fact, I wanna work in a, or I'm trying to start to work in a novel that is based in the murder of the Jennifer. This, yeah. Remember the incarnation, yeah, of Jennifer? It's a lot of things that I don't tell in the short story, but it's a lot of wonderful things that I have in a silver plate all the fact that I have been knowing, because this and that and the other person told me about that, that I have to write.
Okay.
Like a, you know what I mean? So it's like a sequence. You, yeah, know, my story are sequence, because the same character who are, I've been continue with me, with my stories, with the, yeah, stories. You know, they go from one story to the other, you know, or the same you saw in the book, like, for example, La Manuel is in one story and is in another story at the same time, but I just mentioned her, or you see Silvia. When I talk about Silvia, Silvia is the one who go to the, after the walk up. What you say when somebody's dead and you,
yeah,
see,
yeah,
the casket, the one who come to go to look up for me and let's go to the piers to walk and to go.
Yeah. You know,
in the same one that I call when I is in emergency room and the protagonist doesn't know he need somebody to talk with, so you're not gonna get more crazy in the way walking to the emergency room.
Yeah.
So it's the same. That's why it was a very good, I think it was the only one who understood that if he was a literary critic from Mercurio from Chile. He's a very good newspaper, very conservative, but it's good. And this guy understood the short story as a book, as a one piece.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people got that.
Yeah, and what I got from the book is, first of all, and we'll talk about that in a second, it's got an amazing introduction by Pedro Almodóvar, which I'll get you to talk about in a second. But what I got was this real sense of country boy comes to the city. And yes, what we've almost get is kind of like snapshots of your time in the city. You know, and you know, French, there are several themes that run through these stories consistently. I would say the most important theme is friendship.
Yeah.
You know, the most important theme is it's because it feels a kind of like, it feels like a very much migrant story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a sort of a migrant story of friendships among migrants from different sort of like areas of the Spanish-speaking world. And it was just, you know, it was just so fascinating the way that you would introduce these themes, that the most important thing that I noticed was friendship, and that then there were other themes. But I'd like you to talk to us about the foreword, which was, it's an absolutely beautiful foreword, an introduction that Pedro Almodóvar has given to this novel. So can you tell us a little bit about the introduction?
Oh, okay. So I see like what Almodóvar did, he captured what the same thing that you say before is about the friendship. is he talk about like the obviously like everybody gonna speak like this like a sense of humor that LGBT people have because we have learned to centuries to make comedy of this disgrace, you know what I mean, of the vaccine. It's something like we haven't, I mean, God gave us this sense of humor, you know, because life is not easy but for us, because society are done different, whatever, you know what I mean? But we have sense of humor. So obviously you can expect that, but okay, the different cultures, you can expect that, but what Almodóvar got, because he say he make an equal thing with about the friendship and ergo or in consequence of the solidarity between people, you know what I mean? So because he say that solidarity or that friendship reminds him to the same friendship as solidarity that the neighbor of his, when he was a child, used to have in this small town in Spain.
Yeah.
And, you know, so maybe something like have to be with our Latino culture, you know, it's something like, you know, it doesn't have to be with the land, it has to be some also with the language.
Yeah.
Because that's why I continue repeating, like, language, that's why it's Spanglish, is so important. Because why we became friends with the person that is from Mexico, from thousands of kilometers that I'm from Chile, is because, as Pablo Neruda say, the only good thing that the Spanish left us is the Spanish language. You know what I mean?
Now, what I really liked about the introduction as well is that he kind of like, and I don't know if he does this deliberately, but he mentions something that kind of resurfaces through the book. And he talks about his mother going back to her hometown when she was old.
Yeah, how the neighbors take care of her. Friendship and this solidarity.
Yeah. But what I noticed, though, is that through your stories that people don't get to go home. They want to go home. They talk about home. They talk about going home, but they don't get to go there. You know, they're in New York, but home, you know, the places that they've left behind is a really important theme. And I was thinking about the friend who died and who ended up getting taken, you know, and you were hoping that she got back to the country where she would be buried under the tree where she'd played as a child. And it was very, very apparent, this kind of sense of homesickness, you know, a real sense of longing.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, okay, that's a good point. But, you know, because I don't know how it's now, it's been kind of different now, but there are two reasons why people emigrate. One of the most important is the economic factor, and the other one is the, in my case, it was more for the freedom to be by myself. I don't be bad for nobody. Don't be judged from nobody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's another kind of that you have to run away from the loved one or the ones you love, because if not, you know, you're gonna, in some cases, you're not gonna have the money, the way to make money. And also, plus, you're not gonna be yourself that you want. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of things like, those people or my friends and me, we had to leave the place because we're not going to be happy, or because it's going to be an economic factor, or because it's going to be the way you are going to be. I don't know how to explain.
Yeah, I get it. And I really liked that, because we tend, when we talk about migrant sex workers, there's always this emphasis on them being taken to a place or being coerced, whereas, you know, the characters in your novel are actively leaving they're heading, they're moving towards New York, they're moving towards this improved life. And I thought that was really well observed, how you talk about, you know, the sort of circumstances that people were coming from. You describe beautifully the story of a trans woman who'd been a boxer in her home country. And you know, it's those kind of stories that I really loved about this book, because it really kind of made the characters so much more it made them richer, you know, it gave them much more depth of character, and I really liked how you did that. I also like your eye for detail is amazing.
Yeah,
your eye for detail, the way that you see detail is really, really good. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about your first chapter, I think it's the overdose.
Yeah, I have to tell a funny thing about that, but I mean, I'm not because I want to go to another line, another time I can tell you, but it's a funny thing about this short story, but it's a word that happened between the publisher and me, but I don't know, it's okay, but continue in why you like it so much.
Yeah, okay, so the reason I liked it so much is it was so well observed, that kind of like, that thirst. Yeah, that thirst that, you know, you've been there for hours and there's this bottle of water that's close to the bed and you can't reach it. Yeah, it's there.
Move it. Yeah.
And it was so well observed. I've been there. Yeah, I've literally been there. But you were saying anyway, you were saying about your publisher and this first chapter.
No, it's a funny thing because, I mean, like... At the start, I was so proud of this short story because I was thinking I wrote a horror short story. You know what I mean? So I was almost feeling like Edgar Allan Poe. So I was sort of so proud, and I say, "Oh my God, man, pass! I'm going to show you a story, but you're going to love it. Oh my God, I never saw I'm going to write something like that." You know, And for me, I still read it and I see like, man, this is a horror movie, it's a horror story. But she didn't see it like that. And so in Spanish, we say like my humos were very high, or I felt like, oh my God, I'm like Alan Poe, you know what I mean? I can write a horror short story. And she didn't see it. So she was like, but anyway, she was like that, huh? Because I'm very spoiled all the time. Since I was a kid and in the school, in the university, all the time I was like, for me, was not an effort to do something. And all the time, oh my God, you're so good, you're so talented. So since I have memory, listen to that. So she was the one who said, no, it's not good, it's not, you have to do that. You don't. Because I think because of that was a good book too. Because
yeah.
Now the guy, who's the guy who wrote Shining?
Stephen King.
Okay, Stephen King said that it's not a good book, not only because it's a good writer, because it's also a good publisher pushing you.
Yeah.
And that's the case.
But I really liked as well, and I thought what was really clever about this as a first chapter was the description of you kind of overdosing and, you know, everything being quite kind of liminal, like, you know, this idea of haunting, like things sort of not being what they quite appeared. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that this liminal state was one that you were occupying, not just when you were overdosing, but the way that you were living like on the margins.
The limit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think... That's what I really, you know, I really liked about that. But there were so many themes, okay, that I was thinking as I was reading this. I was thinking, like, it's titled the novel, but how autobiographical is it?
It's a lot autobiographical. It's, you know, actually, like you can tell, like I say Mona Lisa in the book a lot of time. And, you know, and all the other characters that are my friends or were my friends, because like I say, most of them pass away. And they talk to the protagonist, who is the writer, the same author. you can tell that because it's say, hey, Mona Lisa. So, or talk about La Chilena is stayed there. So, it's not going to be difficult for any person who's going to read it to know that it's autobiographical.
Yeah, and it was very apparently autobiographical, but just because of the detail was just so well observed, you know. But there were certain themes that just kept coming through, okay. And like I'm a recovered addict, and you mentioned Narcotics Anonymous a couple of times, yeah. And I noticed themes that were coming through, and it was jails, institutions, and death. Right. So anyone who's experienced the 12-step program will know what I'm talking about. But those themes kept coming through. There was jails, there was institutions, there was death. And like
you know what? Let me tell you something. The only thing for me of being good is the institution is because of the story that I heard there.
Yeah.
You know, after going to this 12-step that for me doesn't work. I want to be honest. You know, but I hear a lot of things like, oh my God, sir, it's a thing like in a velorio de Amalia, the wake of Amalia, where La Manuel before came to the room where is the casket with the body of Amalia, you know, with the pack of cocaine. And the author say about the woman who say we addicts are mastering fooling people. You know, this I think this is great. I mean, that's for me, it's like you have to be rolled in a stone to stay forever, for thousands of years in a stone. And I heard that in one of these recovery meetings, you know.
Yeah.
This was a woman who was an alcoholic and she was like very rich and with a lot of jewels, and you know, and he said, because you know, we addicts are mastering fooling people. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my God, and so things like that are there, you know, because we don't create nothing, because it's something like for me, it's very important that people understand we are not like, received inspiration of the Greek god, of the literature, of the writing. No, we are just collecting what is around us, and then we put it together, and then we present to the people.
Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, the death. The theme of death, okay. Talk to us about Jennifer, because she's a really important part in the book, you know, and I get the impression she's an important part in your first work as well. So can you talk to us about Jennifer?
No. Jennifer is shown in the second, in La Beauty Queen, and I want to do my novel about her.
Yeah.
About her murder. That was a murder that happened in 1997. It's a cold case. And they never found who was the murderer, you know what I mean? Because at this time, we're talking about 1997, people didn't even talk about, you know, transgender rights and nothing like that. Actually, it was a big problem with the gay community because they say, oh, no, all these transgender are prostitutes and we don't be represented by these people, you know? So it was a lot of problem between our community, LGBT community, was not LGBTQ yet. You know what I mean? Was just, you know. And so at this time, like a lot of other girls, nobody cared. I mean, nobody was like open a case for them, you know what I mean? Or justice, you know. But the case is like, I have to tell you now, like Jennifer, I never knew Jennifer. But I hear about Jennifer because she was one of the most beautiful transsexual of Hell Kitchen neighborhood. But she used to go to a club that was Sally's, and I used to go to another club that was Edelweiss. With just four blocks of different, but New York has this. Two blocks is one word, two blocks over there is another word. And sometimes you don't get off from this block. You know what I mean? But the scene is like, for some reason, I cannot tell you now everything, but she had been shown up. Like, for example, after she was murdered, I was with Roberto, La Manuel, sitting in his living room. I cannot talk about that because I get emotional. She just passed away 2 weeks ago. So
Okay.
So let's change.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, there is, it's quite, and I think it's sort of like really kind of, sort of is very, very demonstrative of how kind of marginalized that your community
yeah,
was.
Yeah. So it's still it's a lot of work to do, you know, and it still have a lot of stories to tell, you know. I mean, a lot. So I have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, but also what I really liked about it was the level of acceptance mm-hmm. that you had for each other, and like the friendships. The friendships were just, you know, were one of the things that were really noticed.
Yeah, because other things like when you are far from your family, the friends are the family you choose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They became your family. They become your sister. Sometimes they are the mother, you know, sometimes they are the father. Sometimes the older queen is going to talk to you, is going to take care of you. As a mother, is going to take care of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this role happened, or you are other girls, you know, that do, especially in the same work, in sex work, that is something, because we know we go to the same thing, yeah, to the same, you know, police harassment, police brutality. You know, it's a lot of karma, it's a lot of prejudice, it's a lot of more about sex work. So we know, so we help each other because we know what can happen to us, and now it's gonna be unfair, you know what I mean? So yeah.
This is one of the reasons why I particularly like this book, because it's a book written by a sex worker about sex workers, which doesn't really focus on customers. And I really like this about the book. Yeah. Because
people don't understand, it's a work. I mean, like people understand, it's like you go to party, you go to, because you don't like to work, that's why you go to drink, and you go, no, it's a work.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
People ask us, it's a work.
Yeah, but they...
And I know too, because I've done that, and I have no regret of doing it. I'm seeing this, I learned so much things that I never thought I'm going to learn in my life. And you remember in other interviews, I say, listen, you know, what would you do when you have sex? You get naked. When you get naked, you cannot lie. Or maybe you can lie, but you cannot lie a lot because you are naked. So I say, talk with this sex worker and you're going to know how much wisdom and knowledge they have of the human being.
Yeah. And that was.
So it's a lot of things like people need to know about sex work.
Yeah, I mean, but that my sort of like what I was trying to say is that there's a fetishization. Non-sex workers fetishize the relationship between a customer and a sex worker, and it misses it misses the whole kind of panorama.
Yeah. Sometimes it happens, what they seem to happen, but the other time it's a lot of other things that happen. Sex workers are necessary for the healing of the society. Sex is important. This is very important.
I like it when you were talking about, I think you pronounce it frituras, the free guys, the guys that, you know, they're kind of customers, but you're not charging for them, and that you're not charging them. And
the frituras. No, because fritura, that's a kind of Spanglish. Fritura is because free, y fritura is when you fry, french fries, fritura. So you play with the word. I say fritura, it's for free.
Yeah.
You know I mean, somebody who's looking, it's una fritura. Because you like him, you're not going to share him.
Yeah, because it's really funny. And that's why I really appreciate a work about sex work by a sex worker, because when sex work is written about by non-sex workers, a lot of the other incidental actors are lost. Yeah, and that's what I really enjoyed about your book is that you got a real sense of the street. I love when you and your friend are walking from Washington Heights, and he goes off with someone, and he's like, he's not going to be back.
Ah, with the Boricua, el Willy.
Yeah. And it's that's what's really beautiful about this book as well, because it's a walking book. You're walking everywhere. It's all about traveling around New York, getting from where you've got to live to where you need to be to earn money. It's almost like a history, because New York is not like that anymore.
Now that's why it's important for me to work in the novel, because it's the murder of Jennifer happened in 1997, 1998, before the Twin Towers fell, before, the change of the century and the millennium. It was when the cocktail appeared, the locals, they stopped dying before with the AIDS. Now there was the cocktail, so they survived more. So it's another time. It's before Giuliani cleaned up Hell Kitchen neighborhood that now is called Chelsea Clinton neighborhood. You know what I mean? So before Bloomberg make a sell to Disney all this street, all this area of Manhattan. So it was another world. It was like you saw in the Midnight Cowboy. So when the we used to work in the street for the third and eighth, but in the street of the front was the guys, and sometimes you say, okay, you didn't make money. Okay, I'm gonna try to tell the guy that I have a fantasy to be with the guy. You know, we tell each other sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, the boys in the front and the transvestite here and the girls with the pink two blocks more over there. And everybody respects his place, his place. Don't try to go to the other place because I kick you out. But, what's this kind of like a street code?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Street code that police respect also. The police could talk. I remember on Thursdays and Tuesday, be careful, they can arrest you.
Yeah.
It was Wednesday, they didn't bother you.
Yeah, they're doing something else.
You know what I mean? So what's the kind of code in the street that, no, forget it. No, now it's different also, because now it's everything by internet. You know, it's another thing. The street is not anymore.
No.
Different. It's different. Different. It's not bad or worse or better, just different. It's another generation.
Also, what I thought was really significant is what you're talking about, an era just before everyone starts talking about trafficking. Everyone starts talking about trafficking in 2000 after the Paloma Protocol. So it's the time just before the narrative gets hijacked spy trafficking. Mm-hmm. So you get to really look at, you get a really kind of a really anthropological look at a society that can no longer function in that way anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really, really, really well observed. I also really like all the references to drugs, because this is going to feature in the sex and sexuality thing, but it's also going to be in drugs and recovery.
I don't know. Somebody told me about that.
Yeah. It's so what part?
I never tapped on those drugs.
Anyone who's read the book will know this is not true.
No, it's serious.
But the part that drugs play, like, what part did they play in that community? Because they're central, aren't they? They're kind of almost, they're almost like a bonding thing. At one stage, you're talking about your friend who's like, oh, come in, we'll just have a couple of bumps, like a line of coke. And then she gives you a drink. And then she's like, oh, you don't really want to be going out. I'll give you some money.
Yeah, I mean, I have, how can I say, mixed emotion. Of a mixed feeling about that. For one thing, I say, no, it's important. You have to stop, go to recovery. But another thing, I don't know how to explain, you know, because I'm an addict, you know. And I just tell you what I saw, you know. I just tell you, like, sometimes I was so tired, to go to the street to work, doesn't mean you're going to do the all bad. But, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like I cannot start to speak because all my friends, my best friend, use it. Or I'm not with them anymore, you know what I mean? But I don't know how to explain. Maybe I need to write more about that.
Yeah.
So the people are going to have another look about the use of drug.
Yeah.
You know, but
because
I don't know how to explain. I also don't want to tell something like sad. I mean,
no.
At what happened because he used a drug.
No, and that's not. That's,
you know, I mean, no. I didn't say you are saying that. No, I didn't say that.
Came across either.
When I talk with somebody about my book or my thing, I also thinking something I never saw before. And maybe I'm thinking like I really don't want to go to rehab because, you know, it's a waste of time. And I don't want to, because it's a lot of things, it's autobiographical, but maybe it's a lot of things that I didn't tell about the addiction of this character, and I'm never gonna tell because I don't have to tell. Because it's something novel, which is another name, is something that I have to respect because they still are my friend, or they were my friend. And I don't know how to explain, but it's a very good point. You are gonna make me think about
it. Yeah, because what I noticed is that. The sort of like the theme of the drugs is the drugs at the funeral. It was hysterical.
Yeah, it's true. It was true. Yeah,
it's, you know,
it was true. It's absolutely true. I mean, I just went to see her because I wasn't a very good friend. So I met her. I knew her because, like I said, she used to go to another bar, to Sally. I used to go to Edward. And but La Manuel, she told me years after, like, they accused him of stealing the bag of cocaine. And with this, I made the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, all the other things, because I knew all of them, you know, so I couldn't imagine how, you know, they were going to act, you know. But I never was there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never went there. But just with what Roberto La Manuel told me, I just made the story. You know what
I mean? Yeah, and I mean, it was quite interesting, the sort of, because what I noticed with the theme of the drugs was this acceptance of who people are and where they're at. Mm. You know, yeah. There was a real kind of warmth around. There's no judgment.
I think maybe it was not clear, but I'm going to tell you, it's like when La Manuel, Mona Lisa, or the protagonist, when you see Amalia, what's her name? She was the best friend of Amalia. Diva de Panama.
Yeah.
It's like accepting the cheers of the people, the condolence of the people. And I say, he looked at La Manuel saying, hey, look at the clothes she's wearing. It's the clothes of Amalia. And La Manuel Roberto said to Mona Lisa, it's not only with the clothes that she stayed or she got. And there was something was true. And maybe it didn't tell well. She also looked at the business. Because Amalia used to sell drugs.
Yeah.
So when she died, she took all the product. She went to the place, she took all the product. Well, she paid the funeral, she paid the girl, but she took all the business and all the clients. That's why Emmanuel, she said, not only with the clothes, she not only the clothes she took. But it's something like my friends are gonna only understand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I write to them for them.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's quite obvious through the book that although the book is like a really entertaining read, there's very obvious the like little kind of like sort of hooks for people who
everybody are hustler. Come on,
yeah. It's real sort of like.
Yeah. But
I did also as well. What I really liked about the book was that the humor really kind of softened what was a really hard life, you know. And that was really, you know, that was beautiful in a way, you know, because
and it's real. It's real.
Yeah. Yeah. Because also as well, there's a tendency when we talk about sex work, right, to mm-hmm. talk about binaries, yeah, to talk about either exploitation or liberation. Yeah. And actually it's a form of income generation. Yeah. It's generation. And that was really noticeable that you were that people were coming from backgrounds where they weren't just marginalized because of their sexuality, but they were marginalized because of their poverty as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wondered how much of like, you know, because there's so much death in this, even though it's very funny and it's a very beautifully written, well-observed book.
Reality is hard. I mean, like I say, I mean, most of the characters that I wrote them, they are not here anymore.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Especially they have been dying the time the books have been published and wrote it. Yeah. They have died, yeah. And they died young.
Yeah.
And they were my friend, my family. So, well, it's not easy, but at the same time, I have to write. It's just a moral obligation, you know, to write. I have to do it. I mean, it's you know, they're going to come to push my feet at nighttime. You know, it's like I have to. Yeah, what's it? Especially when I'm high, I mean, like I said, they're gonna start to batter me, so I have to write. You know.
But also, as well, it's really important for marginalized communities to write their stories for themselves.
Yeah, and tell it for somebody who knows how is the thing. I mean, this moral thing or this all poor, you know. It's not poor, it's not, you know. I mean, sometimes we do it because I have the choice. I'm an adult person, I want to do it because I make good money.
Yeah.
Okay, what? Well, I need a legal system who protect me as a person who pays his taxes. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say, do it. But if you want to do it, you need to have a legal protection. As simple as that.
Yeah. And it's so what are your plans next? What are your next? What are you working on now?
I don't know working in nothing specifically because it's like here. I mean, I'm writing things. You know, I have a play that is 80% wrote. You know, every time that I read to somebody, the person loves it. They got in shock about this play. And it seems good because it's autobiographic too. It's about, and maybe because it's a lot of things in common, with these two characters. It's a play, the name of the play is Waiting for the Night. One thing is important for me is my crossover. I mean, I wrote it in English. You know, it's the first thing that I wrote in English, not in Spanish. And it's just, it's a South American travesti who fall in love with an Irish construction worker. That is so, it's like it's so typical in New York City. The South American Latina set worker and the Irish construction worker. Is in New York, you're gonna find thousands of them. But this is the story about these two who fall in love. You know what I mean? Obviously it was me, you know, and I'm just putting the dialogue we have. It's no fiction at all.
Okay.
And so, it was so funny, the most funny thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can just imagine, you know, I'm 100% Irish. We're a very charming people.
Oh, you're Irish. Okay.
Yeah. We're very charming people. We, you know, like people fall for us. When you wrote this book, who did you write it for?
La Fury Queen?
Yeah. Who was it written for?
Sorry?
Who was it written for? Who did you write it for?
Okay. I want to start from time ago. When I came to New York City, like I say, I was invited to New York Dramatists because somebody saw my work in Chile and she was like, oh my God, you know, this person is so young. She never had been out of the country. And he saw avant-garde, blah, 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 blah. Because I need to tell you something. Okay, it's a movie, it's a documentary, you know, if you heard about that, it's the Journey of Mona Lisa. You never heard about that? Okay. It's an interview they do to me when I was in the drama school in Chile. I have hair and I have to move my head because I couldn't talk, you know, because that was in front of my eyes. When I saw that, I said, oh my God. Anyway, and I used to talk about these topics, about sex work, about, I remember a show, I wrote a play that I call a character Hichi. I don't know why. And after time, I came to this, and was real. And it's true, I mean, you see it, because Nicole, who's the filmmaker, who was one of my classmates, actually, I was the assistant professor of acting, and she was, this is another story, and she put that in the documentary, how I'm talking about this character that caught my attention, and after here, I became one of this character, so, everything, I don't know, it's like everything has been wrote from before.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
So you wrote your own future.
Yeah, it's like for instinct, not for real. No, it's just, it's like a, I don't know, it's like a, I have, sometimes I get along, my formation, my formal education is a performing art. Okay, that's what I study, and I write, but I'm a performer, and I act, I perform by instinct. I can answer more that in the performing art process. And everything like I have been writing. So in the moment when I start to know all this guy who became my family, my friend. I was like, what am I gonna talk about? I mean, the reality for me was so strong, like I said, what am I gonna talk about? I mean, you know what I mean? I don't know how to explain you. And also, I was very like, intellectual, avant-garde. So like, you know, all the actors could understand, all the artists could not like it. But my new family or the person that I wanted to know, I have to be more simple, more direct, more go to the point. more, I don't care what literature you are. I only care how much money you're going to bring to eat today. You know what I mean? You know, I care about like, oh, that's a nice story. They're going to pay you for that? You know what I mean? It's reality.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know what I mean? It's like, I write for them. I write for my friend. I mean, like my when I write a story, I go to one of my friends and I say, shut up, bitch. Shut up, girl. Listen to me. And they are so busy, they don't care because, you know, they need to, they are practical people, you know, material, you know. And if I get that, then start to listen to me. Forgetting about everything, just listen to me. I say, well done. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I write also to entertain them, to entertain my friends. You know, you know, they invite me to eat, they invite me to, you know, whatever, the favors, you know, and the way that I pay them is like giving them a good time writing short story. Sometimes, yeah, all the time I go to them. If they like it, it's well done. If they don't like it, I say I have to something to change.
But it's so much more than a story though, because like I literally just finished reading the book before I interviewed you. And I like to do that because I like to do it fresh. And what it told me was a story of the global south. In the global Northwest. So it told me a story of like South America, but when South America goes to North America. So it's so much more like, it was a rich story, far more rich and more nuanced. I mean, you could literally, even though you're in New York and all you're talking about is how cold it is, you could feel the sunshine. You know, there was a sunshine in these characters. There's a warmth, there's a generosity. There's, you know, like I said before, there's a historical feel about this. This doesn't exist anymore. You know, this is a memoir of a time that's passed, you know. But also as well, I think it's a really, really important read for anyone who wants to study sex work that has no experience of sex work. Yeah, because what you really do beautifully is that
thank you for that, because nobody before have seen this point.
Yeah.
Nobody before. Nobody has again. I really appreciate what you are saying, because nobody took this point before. No,
yeah.
Nobody. But I've been a lot of critic. If maybe you can Google, it's obviously in Spanish. Now it will show in English, but nobody has mentioned the point of sex work that is very important in the stories. It's part of. You cannot write, or sea, you cannot talk about my story without mentioning the sex work, and nobody mentioned.
Yeah.
Because not because they don't want it, because maybe they don't have the knowledge to read or to understand. So it's important that you too. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I just like
the way that in a way, and I think that stayed with trans sex work for a longer period of time, you know, that you kind of, you're not cut off from society. You don't, you know, you're marginalized, but you're also very much engaged with the society in a way that I think maybe female sex workers weren't, because of the sort of debates around victimization. Yeah, and sort of prostitution. And I just think you've done a wonderful thing. You've done a really
wonderful thing.
You've created a backdrop of a time that doesn't exist. It's a kind of like just 2 years before the debate around trafficking starts, you know, just before the Twin Towers, you know, like everything is in flux, and we get a little snapshot of a lifestyle that's not there to be seen anymore. And I really appreciated what you've done for your community, for sex workers, but also for as an academic with a sex working background who sees our world portrayed in a way that I don't always recognize. And I wanted to thank you for that because I think you've done a really good job.
And thank you for to see that, and thank you for mentioning something that nobody mentioned before.
Yeah, for so. So, yes, yeah, so last chance for a plug. Who are you?
I had so much fun.
Yeah.
I was like a kind of boring. It was like, oh my God, I have to do this. I was so tired. I'm so tired. But now I'm wake up.
So, last chance for a plug. Okay. So, who are you? The name of your book and who publishes it and when is it out?
Okay. So, I think I should show you. Okay. So, the name is my name is Iva Monalisa Ojeda, Two Spirits Transgender. Author and performer, a former sex worker, but sometimes somebody called me and, you know, man is man. And, yeah, man, you talk about sex work, they say here. Yeah. And this is the book, Las Beauty Queen, is the same title that has in Spanish because it's Spanglish. You see, Las Beauty is this road. Like how you pronounce in Spanish, you know, and it's published by Astra House, and it's gonna be the launch in June of this year.
Excellent! It's been amazing to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Same to you.